This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, December 22nd, 2021. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, members of Colorado's Ethiopian and Eritrean communities protested yesterday in Denver against what they say is biased coverage of the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia. We'll look at what's being done to plug methane leaks at abandoned coal mines in Colorado's North Fork Valley. Then, Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. And then we'll hear a radio theater adaptation of the Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life, shared by our friends at KOTO and Telluride. At 9:30, Tanya Lohndorf will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning after these headlines with KGNU's Jamie Sudler.
Colorado health officials are expecting an increase in the Omicron variant of the COVID-19 virus in the state, although the Delta variant still accounts for a majority of cases. At a news conference yesterday, Dr. Rachel Herlihy of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said the percentage of tests coming back positive has increased with cases starting to rise again. The fifth wave of infection during the pandemic, which peaked just before Thanksgiving, had been dropping, with hospitalizations down to about 1,030 people as of yesterday afternoon. But Herlihy said that usually the positivity rate increases first, then hospitalizations and deaths in days and weeks after. She added that cases are spiking in the mountain communities that are popular with tourists, and there's some sign that spread may be increasing in the Denver area. The state is opening new sites for testing and vaccinations along the Front Range, according to Governor Jared Polis. Yesterday, officials in Larimer County asked residents to test for the virus before going to holiday gatherings to reduce its spread. The Denver Center for the Performing Arts canceled more shows for the already long-delayed run of The Lion King because of the virus, bringing the total number of called-off shows to 10. And last night, the Denver Post reports that with less than 2 hours before a basketball game between the Colorado University men's team and the Kansas University, officials canceled it because of COVID-19 issues with the CU program. The prosecutor of the truck driver who killed four people in a crash 2 years ago has started the process to reduce the 110-year prison sentence handed down to Rogel Aguilera Medeiros. Alexis King, the DA for the 1st Judicial District, filed the documents Friday. However, she did not announce she had done so until yesterday. The Denver Post reports that the move is an abrupt about-face for King's office, which had filed and pursued the charges that assured Aguilera Medeiros would go to prison for decades if convicted. The prison term has attracted more than 4.5 million signatures to an online petition asking for clemency from the governor. Judge Bruce Jones, who imposed the 110-year sentence last week, said that under the law he had no discretion and would have sentenced Aguilera Medeiros to a different prison term if he could have. James Colgan, attorney for Aguilera Medeiros, told the Post that the DA's request is about political survival, and she is scrambling because she's feeling a lot of heat. Colgan said that he has already submitted a request for clemency to the governor on behalf of his client. Judge Jones has scheduled a hearing for Monday to discuss the DA's request and whether it's premature. According to state law, a reduction in the sentence cannot be made until about 120 days have passed after Aguilera Medeiros enters prison. The first meeting of the state's new Environmental Justice Action Task Force took place earlier this week. Westward reports that the task force was set up during the last session of the Colorado legislature. The group is charged with making recommendations by November next year, suggesting practical ways to address environmental justice inequality across the state and focus on communities that are disproportionately impacted. The task force comprises 27 members, 9 appointed by the governor, 16 appointed by the legislature, and 2 by tribal governments. One member is Ayan Thomas Tafoya, who is the state director of Green Latinos. He told Westward he is proud that many individuals from his community are included in the task force. The Bureau of Land Management announced yesterday that it would accept nominations for development of solar energy zones in Colorado. According to the Associated Press, the BLM also approved two solar projects in California's Riverside County, enough to generate power for about 130,000 homes. Solar development zones were proposed under the Obama administration to open utility-scale energy projects on public lands in Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah. Yesterday's announcement is part of President Joe Biden's effort to shift away from fossil fuels to counter climate change. The Aurora City Council voted on Monday night to give bonuses of $8,000 to each police officer next year. The move is an effort to retain officers after nearly 90 left the department last year. The resulting turnover rate was nearly 20%. The Sentinel reports that the bonuses will not require an officer to stay with the Aurora Police, and the vote approving the payments was along party lines. The money will come from federal pandemic funds and will amount to about $6 million total. The council members opposed argued that the bonuses should be offered to other city workers as well, including firefighters. However, those supporting the payments to police officers said they were a more pressing issue. It will be mostly sunny today with highs in the low 60s and gusty winds are possible. Tonight a low of 37 and tomorrow mostly sunny with the high near 60. Right now it's 46 in Boulder, 35 in Denver, and 36 in Fort Collins. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Members of the Ethiopian and Eritrean communities of Colorado rallied on the steps of the state capitol yesterday to decry what they describe as a disinformation campaign by mainstream media outlets in coverage of the ongoing conflict in Ethiopia. They say they suspect a narrative in favor of the former regime, led by the Tigray People's Liberation Front, may be used to create public support for U.S. sanctions against Ethiopia and Eritrea. KGNU's Dave Ashton went to the Capitol steps and gathered this sound.
Ethiopia!
Wadafi!
Junta!
Wadawala!
Ethiopia!
Wadafi!
Junta!
Wadawala!
Ethiopia!
Wadafi!
Junta!
Wadawala!
My name is Dawit Agonifer, here from representing the Ethiopian American community, the Ethiopian community.
Well, let's talk about what brings everyone out here today. We see this coffin burying journalism.
Yes.
Journalism is dead. People's signs say, stop the disinformation. They're targeting local as well as national news outlets.
Yes.
Tell us what's going on.
When some people that remain to be unnamed said fake news, you know, we're like, come on, you know, journalism has principles. It's not for sale. But we saw it happen. The coordinated attack on Ethiopia, a sovereign nation, what lobbyists and the State Department and everyone was trying to do, they created a narrative despite what we were saying. They were saying in Addis Ababa, for example, in Ethiopia, the rebel groups are 40 kilometers outside of Addis, and people were crying, why are you saying this? Look, and they just kept pushing that narrative. Because they want to pick their leaders over there, their puppet leaders, and we're really frustrated. This is neocolonialism at its best. And what we're asking for is fairness. Fairness in journalism. Tell both sides. Nine News was telling the same side. We made maybe over 1,000 phone calls. They said they'll give us a chance, and they never did. And we really appreciate, you know, small public radio stations like KGNU that are giving us a chance to tell our side of the story.
So you feel like the mainstream media is lining up to deliver the State Department's desire to overthrow the Ethiopian government, if I can sum that up?
Absolutely. And what we saw was former State Department diplomats. There was a leaked Zoom meeting. How can we use our resources, our network, to help you, rebel group? You know, your prime minister, who was overwhelmingly elected, he's not listening to us, so he must be replaced. So really, this is just unconscionable. And the State Department, of course, tells us that, no, we're fair. But we've seen firsthand that they're never fair, and they have a narrative that they want to accomplish, and they want to put their men, their people, in power. And that's really sad for Africa, especially Black Africa. And one thing to add is the U.S. government promised Egypt that they will lean on us, a poor country. We're headwater country for the Nile. And we're trying to build our first dam. And Egypt, of course, using colonial treaties that we had nothing to do with, is saying, no, you don't have a right to use a drop of water. And this is what the U.S. is doing. It's like, oh, we'll lean on them. They want the Egyptians to be allies against the Palestinians. And, oh, okay, if you want us to help you with the Palestinians, then you have to help us with Ethiopia. And we're just pawns. Over 110 million people, we're pawns. So we have two countries right now that are being pressured, Eritrea and Ethiopia. And it's unfortunate. All we want is peace for our land and a fair chance to mind our own affairs.
My name is Yerusalem Kibert. The conflict in Ethiopia is a very complex issue. As you could imagine, Ethiopia is one of the oldest countries with more than 80 ethnicity, with different language, a very rich country with culture and diversity. The prior regime, named TPLF, or Tigray People's Liberation Front, had brutally ruled Ethiopia for 30 years. In 2018, when our Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed came into power, TPLF refused that peaceful transition of power. Over the year, they tried to, you know, send our elders that went to the region, literally kneeled on their knees, begging them, you know, we know that you've been in power for such a long time, but it's time to reform the system, and it's time to be able to lift our people out of poverty. But TPLF refused. They were very arrogant. There were a lot of things said and done. So November 4th, they decided to attack our National Defense Force. Defense forces, not just one location, but multiple locations in the region of Tigray. So that's how the war started, and that's confirmed by the State Department. So after that, the misinformation, disinformation campaign that we refer to, TPLF, after attacking our National Defense Force, right? That's insurrectionist at the lowest. Somehow, the Western media, or what we call mainstream media, have managed to portray the TPLF as the victim, although they are the victimizers of Ethiopians and Eritreans for the last 30 years. And so we're constantly fighting this misinformation and disinformation campaign that's well coordinated. And so they've continued to use their money and their networks to continue to spread this misinformation and propaganda. So today, more specifically, we're here to ask News 9, Channel 4, to be able to do journalism, right? Journalism is reporting the truth. And so we're trying challenging that narrative. We're advocating for the people because this is a fight for the people of Ethiopia.
Ethiopia!
That was Uyer Rosalik and, before her, David Taganifer, speaking at a protest held yesterday by members of Colorado's Ethiopian and Eritrean communities on the steps of the state capitol. They spoke with KGNU's Dave Ashton. You are listening to The Morning Magazine. For nearly a century, Colorado's North Fork Valley relied on coal for high-paying jobs and a thriving economy. But as the mines close their doors, they leave behind a troubling legacy: leaking methane. Methane is a greenhouse gas that is about 80 times more potent than carbon dioxide, and global leaders are taking it seriously. Last month, over 100 countries pledged to cut methane emissions by 30% in 2030. One entrepreneur in the North Fork Valley is a step ahead, using his business to address methane emissions while also tackling other environmental problems. KVNF's Stephanie Malterich reports.
Eric Edwards maneuvers his machine through sandy sediment in the mudflats on Paonia Reservoir. He was hired by Delta Brick and Climate Company to collect 40 cubic yards, about 4 dump truck loads of sediment from the reservoir.
Now this you got another 6 inches that you know is good because we didn't take from this area last time. Yeah, there's your...
In 2017, Chris Kasky founded Delta Brick and Climate Company, which manufactures tile and brick. The company also operates with a mission: to find solutions to environmental problems in the North Fork Valley while creating jobs in a transitioning economy. The first problem Delta Brick tackled was the excess sediment in Paonia Reservoir. The sediment creates a high-quality clay they now use to make tile and brick.
All of the water that is stored is committed to go to farms downstream from here in the Paon-Yahatchkiss area. So this mud and sediment that has filled in has made about a third of that storage capacity go away. And so their irrigation season has shortened.
Then, Kasky brainstormed solutions to manage the methane that leaks from abandoned coal mines in the area. A 2016 study by Colorado's Energy Office found that nearly 20 abandoned coal mines in and around the North Fork Valley have the highest potential for methane capture than any other former mines in the state.
So the coal mines are leaky. They leak all over the mountainside, primarily from old mine shafts and portals, but also from cracks in the geology. We would like to start using the sediment in the reservoir to seal off these leaks.
After a couple of years of research and conversations with stakeholder groups, Kasky, who is also a chemist, has found a way to address both problems with one solution. He wants to seal the leaking mines with plugs manufactured with sediment.
And that'll make our methane capture systems more efficient, keep more methane out of the atmosphere,
and essentially eliminate methane leaking from the mines, keeping in line with new global standards. A few days after it was collected, a dump truck full of sediment arrives at Delta Brick's factory, located in a large, airy warehouse near downtown Montrose. Two employees manage the factory's day-to-day operations, from mixing clay, firing kilns, and glazing tile. Evan Barrett is the production manager, and he appreciates working for a company with a business model focused on solutions.
It's a creative idea, just in the way it is. Really trying to make the maximum amount of impact from all different angles, you know, not just the watershed issues and water storage, but also the methane, but also creating jobs in coal communities.
Delta Brick has seen a steady growth in brick and tile sales over the past year, but Kasky says grants from various state agencies have been essential to keeping the business running. He commends Colorado's leadership in supporting communities in transition.
Colorado has been great, and it's a first in the nation to have actual resources and humans thinking about how to make this transition good for other people and good for communities.
Wade Buchanan, the director of the Office of Just Transition, created in the state in 2019, says he is inspired by creative solutions like Delta Brick because it's important for individuals and communities to decide what they want to do moving forward.
If we came into a situation and said, okay, you guys are mine workers who are being displaced. Here are three kinds of jobs you can have, and we're going to work with you on those three kinds of jobs. It would have limited their future. It would have limited the community's future.
Kasky agrees it's not about telling people what to do. It's about an appropriate response.
You know, the correct relationship to this reservoir is to try to get the mud out that comes in. And the correct relationship with these abandoned coal mines is not to totally abandon them, but to capture that methane and keep it out of the atmosphere. And the correct relationship to the coal communities is not to leave the people behind, but to bring them along in a just transition.
Kasky says Delta Brick's next step is to move the factory to an abandoned coal mine in Somerset, where they will use captured methane to power brick and tile operations. Reporting for KVNF and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Stephanie Maltrich.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear. This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat of Washington, said that, quote, Senator Manchin has betrayed his commitment not only to the president and Democrats in Congress, West Virginians and the country see clearly who he is. But a recent poll in West Virginia showed that Manchin has a 60% approval rating versus Biden's 32% there. Biden had promised to deliver the 50 senators needed to take Build Back Better to the finish line. This failure, coupled with another explosion of COVID cases over the holidays, has caused Biden's approval ratings to drop into the low 40s. But some real accomplishments have taken place this year. Biden's policies are hugely popular, but Biden himself is not. Journalist Magdi Simrao believes that the disconnect is at least partially the fault of the media, harping on the cost of Biden's measures without specifying what's in them, calling negotiations disarray, downplaying obstructionist strategies of the Republicans. Quote, Democrats want to fix bridges, provide child care, and lower drug costs. Republicans don't. These are political facts, and voters should be aware of them. The U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan was not the disaster as often portrayed as. Trump's drawdown from 100,000 troops to 3,500 had removed most intelligence officers, so Biden didn't know that most Afghan troops had quietly agreed to disarm. But we airlifted 124,000 people, including some 6,000 Americans, for 6 weeks before the U.S. left. Biden set out to take a major role in the world. He re-entered the Paris Climate Accords and the World Health Organization and revitalized the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which Trump had weakened. Biden and the U.S. led the world in COVID vaccinations, and we are by far the largest donor of vaccines globally. Under Biden, we're bouncing back economically from the pandemic way more rapidly than other countries. In March, Biden helped push through the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan stimulus package to rebuild our economy, and gross domestic product growth this past quarter is expected to be 5%. The stock market has hit new highs. Two-thirds of Americans are actually content with their finances. Biden mobilized people on the supply chain issue. In the last 3 weeks, the number of containers on docks is down 33%, and shipping prices have dropped 25%. Major retailers say they have plenty of inventory on hand for the holidays. More than 5.5 million new jobs created in 10 months. Unemployment claims are the lowest they've been since 1969. Workers' pay has risen 13% in many sectors, and there are openings across the labor market. The American Rescue Plan doled out more than $5 billion in rental assistance, and the expanded child tax credit cut child poverty in half. Biden negotiated the bipartisan $1.2 trillion infrastructure package. Biden reoriented the government away from supply-side economics and towards supporting regular Americans. So take a break from calling your congresspeople if you'd like to just enjoy the holidays. Remember that we actually have made some real progress these last 11 months. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
Time now for Naturally with herbalist Brigitte Mars.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. One of the things that helps me get through really difficult times is soaking in the bathtub. Now, I realize not everyone has a bathtub, but hopefully next place you live will. Water, by far, is our most valuable cosmetic. And even though we're blessed to have showers, and hot showers at that, soaking in a warm, fragrant tub offers such a time of retreat, reflection, and refreshment. It can be a real turning point in the day. You don't have to use too much water because we all want to be conservative, and we probably noticed how dry it is right now. But in a shower, you have to stand up, and in a bath, you get to lay down in this warm, womb-like quality of the water. And every day I get to take a bath, I consider it a blessing, especially after 2 years of bathing in an icy cold creek. That was a long time ago. And there's all kinds of things we can do to make baths even more relaxing. We need to know that most bubble baths contain sodium lauryl sulfate, which can actually dry the skin. So we want to avoid that. We want to avoid bath compounds that have chemical salts, mineral oil, and synthetic fragrances, all of which can be irritating. Do you have a lost sock collection, perhaps, hoping you'll find that missing sock again? Well, you can take one of the found socks, stuff it with herbs of your choice, like lavender, roses, calendula, and then tie it up and then run the bath really hot. And then when the water cools down, you are essentially taking a bath in herbal tea, and you absorb some of the healing properties of the herbs, such as the calming properties of lavender, the hydrating qualities of rose, and the skin-soothing properties of calendula. Some people like to use oatmeal in the bath. You can also tie that into a sock. Really good for skin conditions like eczema and psoriasis. And baking soda and Epsom salts are also wonderful additions to the bath. You don't have to put those in a sock. They'll just dissolve. But we know that Epsom salts is really high in magnesium and can relax your muscles and help you to sleep better. I also endorse just using a few drops of essential oil in the bath. Fill the tub up first, and then you can add 7 drops of lavender or rose or Siberian fir. And, you know, if you're taking a bath without any synthetic compounds, just a few drops of essential oil, you might think about collecting some of that water and giving it to the plants on the porch or the balcony or out front, because water conservation should be everybody's responsibility. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Special thanks to Jamie Sudler, Dave Ashton, Stephanie Malterich, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then a radio theater production of the Christmas classic, It's a Wonderful Life. But first, these news headlines from the BBC.